Who are you?
Raul Wybera.
Jim Arrowwood.
J.P. Harvey.
What do you want?
To talk about the show Crusade with friends and fans.
Where are you going?
All the way through Crusade and then to the novels.
Who do you serve and who do you trust?
Babylon 5 fans everywhere.
This is still the Babylon Project podcast.
The year is 2020. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to, well, I don't know whether to say grateful or sad as far as the episode. If you didn't like Crusade, you might be grateful. But if you like the podcast, you might be sad because this is the last podcast of Crusade.
But just Crusade, yeah.
This is Raul Wybera, and welcome to the Babylon Project podcast. I am, as always, joined by my good friends Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. How are you two gentlemen tonight?
Oh, just about right.
Same here. Ready to dream of home, I think.
Oh. Well, you know, Jim, J.P. may have almost stole your thunder, but what episode are we talking about tonight?
Well, as JP pointed out, we're going to be watching or talking about Each Night I Dream of Home.
I Dream of Home.
Yes. In airing order, this is the very last episode that aired of Crusade. And I'm going to hand it over to JP to give us the other facts and figures for this.
All right. This is another one written by the man himself, JMS. Directed by one of our favorite guys, Stephen First. Was produced fifth in the production order and was intended originally to be aired as the fifth episode. So
that makes a whole lot more sense.
Yes. The air date was the 1st of September, 1999. And as it actually aired, it was aired, as we know, based on the podcast, 13th. So about 8 episodes after JMS intended for it to show.
Right. That just blows me away at some, you know, at points, at times when I think about it. I'll be honest, my wife was after the first episode, she kind of gave up on watching it with me. And she started to catch these last episodes, and her comment was almost the same as mine. It's like, this isn't the same show. It's like, no, these last episodes that we're seeing were shot before TNT started interfering too much.
Wow.
Well, based on what JP said, we have a character that we're familiar. We have actually a couple of old characters from the series that are introduced, and one of them that are introduced for the first time, except one of them's not really introduced for the first time in the sequence that it aired. So, yeah. Jim, in order to clear up some of that confusion that I just talked about as far as guest cast and whatnot, how about giving us a summary? That should clear things up.
Let's have a summary. What the heck?
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Senator Jacob Redway of EarthGov and a traveling companion, David Williams, are delivered to Excalibur, the Senator delivers sealed orders to Gideon to head for Earth for an undisclosed top-secret mission. While en route to Earth, Matheson picks up a faint distress signal, which turns out to be from Captain Lockley. She is in a Star Fury that has been damaged during a firefight with a large fleet of Raider ships. Against the orders of Redway, Gideon rescues Lockley before proceeding to Earth. Upon arrival, a shuttle rises from the planet and releases a life pod containing Dr. Stephen Franklin, who comes on board the Excalibur. He is isolated from the rest of the ship in a lab. He is there to learn how the Drock virus behaves once it enters the body. David Williams has volunteered to be infected to help in return to being sent back to Earth to be reunited with his fiancée. Williams is infected, and Franklin, along with Dr. Chambers, collect information. Meanwhile, a Drock fleet attacks, and there is a firefight in space that results in damaging a system that could destroy the information Franklin has gathered. The Drock ship is destroyed, and Williams is rescued from death by Franklin. It is learned that the Drock virus is a nanovirus that requires programming. Further research is required to see if the plague can be cured. Well, there it is.
Oh, there it is.
Character files opened.
So we've definitely got some, we've got a mixed guest cast, old friends and favorites, some fairly big name character actors, and a couple of people that this is really all they did. So who do we have tonight, Jim?
Well, our special guest star for this episode was Richard Biggs, who is reprising his role as Dr. Stephen Franklin. Okay, under guest starring, we have Lance Legault, I think you say it, as Jacob Redway, the senator that comes on board. He has also been on Logan's Run, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, Knight Rider, The A-Team, Quantum Leap, and Star Trek Next Generation. And under guest
basically,
starring...
Basically, if you don't recognize him, just wait around and look at the face. You know you've seen him somewhere.
Oh, yeah. And then we have Timothy Williams as David Williams. No other real genre credits to his name. And under co-starring, we have Liz Lavoie as Carol Miles and Carl Rigiardio as the Drock captain, who also appeared in The Long Night. And that is our guest cast. It's not very large. What's really sad about this episode being the last episode is who is missing. We don't have Max. We don't have Darina. Yep. We don't have Galen. So, you know, it was kind of a letdown for me to know it was the last episode and we're missing half the cast.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Would have been okay if they ran it in order, but unfortunate that this ended the series.
Yeah.
Initiating plot analysis.
Let's, I guess, start with our last opening monologue / dialogue.
Okay.
Anything yet?
Negative, sir.
They're now 2 hours late. Any more word from Earth?
Well, just that we're to wait here until contacted. Nothing more on the nature of our mission or who we're waiting for.
Point of logic, if we don't know who we're waiting for, then how are we supposed to know it's them when they arrive?
Well, sir, if they start shooting at us, it's probably not one of ours.
Congratulations, Lieutenant. You're even more naive than I gave you credit for.
Lieutenant, we're picking up a distortion field.
Jump point forming. Distance, 5,000 kilometers. It's a Warlock-class destroyer. They're asking permission to send over a shuttle. 2 passengers.
Confirm permission.
Permission granted, Foxfire.
Only a handful of warlock destroyers have come off the construction line so far. Who's ever on that shuttle must be pretty damned important to justify them playing taxi.
Shuttle away.
So first,
yeah, they don't know, but
no,
huh?
No, I was going to say my first question is why is Gideon sitting in the command chair playing with a deck of cards?
Yes. Well, he is a bit of a gambler. We've pretty much got that established.
Ah, yeah.
Something of a card shark, in fact, it seems.
I don't know. Seems a bit unprofessional.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a cool-looking ship.
Well, that was the Warlock class. It's had a few... They got rid of the Shadow Spires.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely had a few upgrades since President Clark's days.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take us long to find out that the person coming aboard is Senator Redway. With at first we think it's his aide or an attaché, a guy named David, on a secret mission. And apparently some of the senators were off planet when the plague hit. And Excalibur is now under new orders from the Joint Chiefs on a trip to Earth.
Mm-hmm. And we get a little argument now between Gideon and Redway as to, you know, it kind of turns into a little bit of a butt-kicking contest. Well, I'm not going to do this because these are my orders. Well, you got new orders. Well, that's tough. I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. No, you're not. Blop, a little bit of back and forth before it finally got sorted out.
Yeah, it might have been a little... Well, you start off by giving the orders from the Joint Chiefs. What is the phrase that they use to describe a ship's captain? Master after God?
Handsome and well-groomed?
Rugged. I think it's rugged looking.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, he is a master after God as far as rule of the ship is concerned.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Senator Redway is probably going to need a reminder of that before it's too long.
Well, JP has told us about this on earlier occasions.
Yep.
Getting orders from senators. It's just...
Yeah, not in the chain of command,
yeah.
Which is what he points out.
You know, and I can't imagine...
Points it out firmly a little later.
I can't imagine, even if the orders have come down from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that they would send this information with a senator rather than directly to the ship.
If it's secret enough, perhaps, but he'd be handed the physical orders or a crystal of the orders.
Yeah, one would think.
Probably, but one would think.
They do their little round and round. And it settles down, but you notice Gideon never looks satisfied. He looks suspicious.
Yeah. Well, who would?
Okay. Yeah, I got the orders. All right.
Who wouldn't be? I mean, you're supposed to be the master of your ship, and you aren't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, because I'll forget to bring it up later, there's a cool little scene later in the episode when Gideon and Lockley are talking and then he goes to walk away or she walks away, they separate and whatever she was doing. And he says, as you were, or carry on or something. And that's a good illustration of that authority. Although he's a junior officer, he is the captain of the
he's
ship.
He's the captain of that ship.
She's a senior officer, but he essentially properly dismisses her.
Yep.
So it just interesting little snippet into,
even if you're an admiral, you ask permission to come aboard.
Right.
Oh yeah. Those protocols are everywhere. When I was in the army doing fire guard in the middle of the night, I was told it doesn't matter who comes to that door. They don't come in unless the charge of quarters is with you or is with them.
Mm-hmm.
So
he reluctantly, accepts what appears to be handed to him.
Yep.
And we get to learn what the secret mission is.
Yeah, a little trip to Earth. But then we cut away to Lockley, who seems to be in a little bit of trouble. Ship appears to be shot up. Her helmet's cracked. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
But what the heck was she doing?
She's got a bloody nose. She's got an injury to the side of her head, and her ship is low on O2.
And she cuts it even lower just to try and extend it.
She is in a world of hurt.
Yeah. Back to our senator.
Guy reminds me of Fred Thompson.
Yes, he does.
Except there's a difference. I like Fred Thompson. I don't like the senator, the character, at least.
Yeah. Well, the reason he reminds me of that is if I closed my eyes, I could see Fred Thompson delivering these lines.
Easily.
You know, all the little hillbilly quips and things that he puts in there. I'm sure he's a whole lot smarter than he's letting on.
Yep. It's almost like he's enjoying the mystery or yanking the commander's chain.
He's got all the chips in front of him and right. He's loving that.
Or at least he thinks. Go ahead and play this little clip. It's a shorty.
You approve, Senator?
Yes, yes. It's a fine ship, Captain. Cost the folks back home a wheelbarrow full of money, but given what's happened, I'm glad I voted to support funding the project.
Actually, sir, you voted against it.
Didn't your daddy ever teach you not to contradict your elders?
No, sir.
Well, I see part of the problem here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Perfect reply.
Yeah, well, yeah. So we've already caught this guy in a lie now, so he's shady.
A politician. Well, yep. He's a politician. We already knew that. But yeah, I see why just hearing it off of the, well, he can't even look appearance wise. He kind of makes you think of Fred Thompson in a way, but, just hearing the audio, I see what you mean. I could see it easily.
This guy's at least a foot and a half shorter than Fred Thompson.
Well, yeah, there is that.
But at any rate,
David wants to talk to the doctor.
What about?
That's going to be an interesting question here. And how shall we say this? Matheson might follow the telepath protocols meticulously, but he doesn't seem quite as tight as far as diplomatic policy and processes, does he?
Well, that's not his job. His job is not to be a diplomat. His job is to find a cure for the Drock plague.
Oh, yeah, and his job is to be a good XO for his captain, and go ahead and play it.
Lieutenant, when our guests showed up, did they go through the usual ID protocol?
Yes, sir. But Senator Redway did insist on logging only name and point of origin. Why?
I'm wondering why a civilian is traveling on a classified mission with a high-ranking Earth senator along as nursemaid.
Are you suggesting that I log onto EarthNet and find out what I can about him? Profession, age?
I'm not suggesting anything, Lieutenant.
Because that would be a significant breach in protocol.
I understand. I wouldn't dream of asking.
David Williams, age 32, born Patterson, New Jersey, American state. A plumber.
A plumber? As in fixing drains? Senator must be awfully insecure about our facilities.
Well, you know what? In light of the last episode, the X-Files episode, and considering that sewer stack that busted, maybe a plumber on board wouldn't be such a bad idea.
Yeah, might just be exactly what they need. And I can't help but wonder if that was, well, wait, what was the X-File episode before or after this one? It's like, where did it fall on the sequence?
Oh, that I don't know.
It was supposed to air as number 4, and this was supposed to air as number 5.
At any rate, I have been waiting all day to point out that a plumber probably isn't a bad idea.
Yeah.
The senator had heard about the issue.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or he rode in the tube and smelled it, one or the other. Do you smell something?
Mm-hmm. Well, Matheson actually does a good Exo's job. He anticipates his captain and has it ready.
Ah. Uh-huh.
And I got to admit, I like the banter between Matheson in his original visioning by Straczynski. I definitely had a snark streak to him.
Well, he did, and he was more animated, and he was more human, which, you know, apparently he lost that as time went on and just kind of became furniture.
Yeah, it's like the suits said tone him down or something. I don't know.
You know, by golly, we have to have a first officer around, but we don't have to give him any lines.
Right.
Other than, oh, I hear a distress signal, or, oh, someone's trying to call us, or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, at about this point, I'm thinking, huh, okay, so guess who's going to find Lockley? And right at that moment that I wrote that in my notes, play this, Jim.
Closing on target. Emergency crew standing by. Bracing for impact.
Perhaps we should stop.
You made a point of reminding me that I have to follow my orders to the letter, so that's exactly what I intend to do. We don't stop for anything.
Here it comes. Star Fury captured. No damage reported.
Good. Just for the record, Senator, once upon a time, I was at the other end of a distress beacon like that, wondering if someone was going to come for me, and I was lucky. Someone did. So I will never turn my back on a distress beacon. Not for you. Not for anyone. Not ever.
Jump to hyperspace, Lieutenant.
Aye, sir.
I'd say Gideon reminded the senator who was captain nicely.
Yeah, that was cool.
Well,
and I scoop her up. What was that?
Yeah, yep. The line earlier. Yeah. Drive carefully.
Well, you know, if Gideon had ignored a distress signal and went somewhere else, he would have faced a general court. It doesn't matter whether there was a senator or anybody else.
Yep.
That's a standing order. If someone's in distress, you help them.
Yeah, that takes priority. And that's true on our wet Navy even today, isn't it?
Yes, it is, I believe.
How about that way to catch a ship?
Yeah, the gravity
nets. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was even more sophisticated than Star Trek, who just used a big, huge cargo net popped up out.
Oh, yeah.
Popped up out of the deck, but
oh God, which movie was that?
That was Star Trek V.
Five.
Yeah.
Yep. The one we kind of generally pretend didn't get filmed.
The much maligned Star Trek V, which it's maybe much maligned, but it's a Star Trek movie and I like it. So at any rate, moving right along, since this is not
moving right along
Star Trek, I love the movie episode. This happens.
No. But we start to get some pieces about David's little story here.
Yeah. We're going to find out about what the plumber's really up to.
I was still working on the mining colony on Omega 7 when the Drac attacked. But I was due to go home in just a few days.
Then you're lucky. If you'd have gone back to Earth a few days earlier, you would have been exposed to the plague. Now, at least no matter what happens, you'll survive.
That's the point. See, that's why I need your help. I want you to infect me with the plague.
He wants to be infected.
And considers that helping.
Yeah. Well, you know, without knowing the rest of the story, of course, you know, that sounds a little insane.
Yeah. Well, at the risk of a spoiler on a 20-something-year-old series, even knowing the reason sounds a little bit insane. But it is warm kittens, and it was just cute kids that Straczynski said he would never do. So, okay. Okay. Warm kittens, rainbows, and unicorn farts are okay. All right. So.
Jeez.
Moving on to Lockley, her story. It turns out she was caught by raiders. And my first question there is like, what the hell is she doing out there alone chasing raiders? But
well, I don't remember.
She wants to know.
Did she get, was she just flying around and the raiders popped up, or was she, how, why? Because I can't imagine her chasing the raiders.
I am hoping so. Though what makes one wonder, why was she, what is she doing so far away from Babylon 5?
Well, she probably needed flight time.
Right. But, I'm guessing she was too shot up to make it near it to a jump gate, but she, you know, she's in a sublight craft, so.
Yeah.
It's a little strange, too, that she's lost, at least, and damaged. Mm-hmm. But you would think some sort of a broadcast or word would have gone out on secure channels to let, you know, the rest of the force know the commander of Babylon 5 is missing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Apparently, if that went out, they didn't have that info.
Or I wonder if it was still in, whether or not her return had been anticipated yet or not.
Yeah, so, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So any
no telling, we never find an answer to this either, though.
Yeah.
No.
So anyway, you know, Gideon shows up to say hello. And she wants to know, you know, he says, we've got this mission. We can't take you home back to Babylon 5 yet until we finish this mission. And she wants to know what it is.
Yeah. And he can't tell her because he doesn't know himself.
Yeah. She's a little taken aback by the commander of the ship not knowing what their mission actually is.
Yeah. And it kind of ends with him offering her dinner.
What is it with these two and dinner?
Well, in this case, it's more, I mean, he doesn't have a steward, but it's more of a, comes off more as a professional courtesy.
Yeah.
What? With a crush. But,
well, that seems to come a little later. Okay, yeah. How much of their interaction do we have as a clip, Jim?
Well, quite a bit, I think.
Yeah. Well, it might be long, but it'll be worth it. Go ahead. Let's go ahead and play it.
Good to see you again, Captain. Hope I'm not bothering you. They told me you were awake.
No, no, it's fine.
What happened?
We'd set a trap for some raiders that had been hitting civilian transports. Let's just say they were a hell of a lot more of them than we expected. How long have I been out?
A little over 2 days. You were in pretty bad shape when we found you. Dr. Chambers felt the best thing was to keep you out until you got past the worst of it.
2 days? No, I gotta call B5.
I'm afraid that we can't do that. Not for a while longer, anyway. We've been running silent ever since we started our approach to Sector 100.
Sector 100? Earth? Why?
I can't tell you that.
How long is this going to take?
I can't tell you that either.
But is there anything you can tell me?
Never eat anything bigger than your head. Never shoot pool at a place called Pops. Never eat food at a place called Mom's. The mission is classified, Captain. I don't even have the full story myself. As soon as I can fill you in, I will. I'm having you move to the infirmary. It's more comfortable, and I'm told we'll need the space. We'll drop you at Babylon 5 as soon as we can. Meanwhile, consider this a surprise vacation. Yes?
Approaching the rendezvous point, Captain.
I'm on my way. Perhaps you'll join me for dinner once you're up and about?
Will you be serving anything bigger than my head?
Not on a first date, Captain.
Yeah, I think in this case it was more of the professional courtesy. Their interaction is definitely much more professional,
I suppose.
And well, they're not getting hot and steamy, ripping each other's clothes off in a shower. So there is that.
Yeah,
it fact, it's a very different relationship than the early episodes.
Yeah. So anybody watching the show would wonder, after watching the previous shows, why they're behaving the way they are at this
point. And referring to this as a first date?
First date. You're thinking, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. At least if you haven't had, you know, if you were watching this live the first time, you're sitting there, you've got to be sitting there totally confused.
Yeah, but we
because it's obvious here they barely know each other.
Yeah. Well, we've peeled this banana before, so, you know.
Indeed, we have.
All right.
I loved the conversation between Matheson and Gideon next, but we've pulled so many clips. What face of your father do you remember?
Yeah, this was almost, it reminded me of the Dark Tower series. Not the literal dialogue, but all these references back to remembering the face of your father.
Yes.
I don't know if that's why it was there, but it was kind of a neat.
I don't know. Would you know? I have never bitten off the Dark Tower series.
Someday.
Yeah.
Anyway, the senator joins them. They have a shuttle approaching with a life pod, and oops, it malfunctions.
We get a boom.
Yeah, at least we finished the movies or finished the television series set with some boom.
Yes.
And yeah. It was
a strange circumstances. You know, the senator knew everything that was going to happen.
And he's enjoying himself.
And Gideon reminds him that, hey, anything that comes up out of the atmosphere is supposed to be shot down. And the senator says, that's already been taken care of. And then a few seconds later, kablooey goes the shuttle.
Yep.
And Gideon turns around, and what I expected him to say was, I hope there weren't people on board that shuttle. But apparently it was an automated flight with nothing but the pod, the life pod on it.
Right. And from there we get a quick cut to David trying, well, something that you could at best call suspicious.
Yeah.
Just to let us know what's up. And then we're back in a low pressure, a negative pressure, secure med bay in isolation. And we find out who is in the pod. Big feet.
Big man.
He does have big feet. Yeah. Yep. Big man. Stephen Franklin, his last appearance in the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. And we also find out rather quickly that the plan is to infect someone and follow the progression of the virus.
Yeah, which, you know, Gideon was kind of standoffish about this. He's like, you're going to what? And I don't blame him. I mean, I thought the same thing. Franklin is going to intentionally, this is Dr. Franklin we're talking about, who was very much do no harm kind of person. And he's going to intentionally infect someone.
I've been involved in a few studies where it's like, okay, you know, we shut them down because, this is having too much of a pro-arrhythmic effect. It's causing arrhythmia. It's not getting rid of them.
Yeah.
That he would go there tells you how desperate they are.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of a gamble, because if the cure is found, of course, David is going to be cured.
Right.
But that is the farthest thing from his mind. He could care less whether he's cured or not.
Nope. He's calling his wife, sneaking a call.
It's his fiance, actually.
His fiance, yeah. You're correct, his fiance. To let her know he's coming home. And I guess it's a party line. Because for you kids that don't remember, that are too young to remember, a party line is a telephone line that is shared amongst multiple people, multiple homes or numbers. In this case, the other people listening in are a Drak fleet listening to David, which seems to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
But we get the final why about what's motivating David.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Franklin says that you volunteered to be infected with the Drak virus as a human guinea pig to track the infection. But he didn't tell me why. Perhaps you could.
I'd rather not, Captain.
This is my ship. If I allow this to continue, it's on my conscience. I won't sanction this until I know why you're doing it.
It's Carol. Her name is Carol Miles. We met when we were both working in the Omega 7 mining colony. Fell in love. About 7 months ago, she was reassigned back to Earth. And right before she left, I asked her to marry me. She said yes. And then the Drak attacked, and before I knew it, the whole planet was quarantined. We have set a date, Captain. I am getting married in a week, and there is no way that I'm going to miss my wedding. I'm not going to let that woman down. I'm not going to break my promise to her. You see, the only way that I can do that, the only way that I can get through the blockade is if I am contaminated.
Mr. Williams, if you do this, you could be dead in less than 5 years.
Captain, I could be dead tomorrow. We all die. I can't live without her. And I'd rather live 5 years with her than 100 years without her. Can't you understand that?
Maybe someday, if I'm as lucky as you are.
So actually, we find out... Yeah, we find out David is actually quite courageous.
Yep, but he's doing it for love.
Oh, well.
Because true love.
Whatever the reason
is. Follow you forever.
Except I don't think he will end up just mostly dead if they don't find a cure, though.
Right. How did they get him to Miracle Max? He could be fine.
Yeah. We learned something else in this conversation, too. Right now, we're only a few months after the attack. So it really does seem earlier in the timeline than the other episodes. Well, because it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but just from a professional interest, I wanted to run through Franklin's logic for the human trial. And partly because, like what you said, Jim, to do something like this for Franklin is so completely out of his character.
Oh, hey, real quick, before we move to Franklin, the statement that David makes that he won't break his promise to his fiance, that's another theme that has emerged. Which episode was it that was all about keeping promises and whatnot? But anyway, that when he said that, I thought, oh, here's one of those things that keeps surfacing through Babylon 5 and through Crusade.
Keeping your word and integrity.
Keeping promises. Yep. Which tracks back to B5 and consequences and things like that. But I thought, man, there's another common theme that I wonder if this would have built out somehow if Crusade had lasted for 4 or 5 seasons.
Oh,
not
I'm
this
sure
character
it would
per
have.
Se, maybe. But
because the character with, in some ways, Max. Low integrity, but even even Gideon, we've already seen, it's like, okay, how much is he willing to compromise?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you just
Right before,
I was just gonna say, you know, you just threw crap on Max, questioning his integrity. I don't recall him lying at all, being shifty and devious. Yes, but I don't ever recall him in the episodes we've seen him in being a liar.
Which is why I said, forget Max. What about look at the one who's really willing to compromise? Seems to be the captain.
Oh, okay.
And do you guys notice at the beginning of that scene when David gets almost caught? He looked, I thought, the way his reaction, his physical mannerisms, he reminded me of Veer, which is funny given that...
Oh, gosh. given that Stephen First was directing?
Yeah, so it made me like this character before I really understood why I should like him. Because it reminded me of Veer, and then we get this very honorable objective of his, to why he wants to be infected.
Yeah, because at the beginning of the...
I got us off.
I was going to say, at the beginning of the show, Senator Redway shut him down big time. So, you know, it was just, here we got this wimpy guy coming along. What we find out, as JP is pointing out, that he isn't so wimpy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I derailed us from talking about Franklin's logic a little bit here. So.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and let Franklin explain.
You always this quiet when you're working?
Well, only when I'm trying not to think about it. When the time comes, I'll push the button that will mix the air between the other isobay and my own. I don't want you doing it.
I'm perfectly capable.
No, it's not that. I just don't want you to have it on your conscience, that's all.
Has there been any luck with animal experiments? Maybe we can avoid...
No, the virus works differently on every species it infects. And finding a cure for guinea pigs only saves guinea pigs, nothing else. The one thing it does seem to have in common is that it infects all air-breathing mammals. We haven't even been able to isolate the damn thing. We know it's airborne, but finding something so small in such a huge body of air is damn near impossible. We've gone as small as a 50-micron screen, we still can't find it. But we know it's there.
How?
The day the virus was released, 850 people around the world died of a rare strain of Ebola virus. One we'd never seen before. They all got sick at the same time, and they all died roughly at the same time. Two of them were on an island in the Pacific where the virus could not have possibly reached because no one had come to the island for 2 weeks due to a hurricane. 48 hours later, another 712 total strangers in different parts of the world all died of a previously unknown strain of hepatitis B. Others followed.
This told us that the same virus was operating all around the world at the same time, going through progressive changes, mutations, as it adapts to our biology. It keeps popping up in different forms.
That's how we got the 5-year framework. Odds are it'll hit the right mutation within that time period, or so completely decimate the entire population through trial and error that there won't be enough people left alive to merit being called humanity.
It's also possible we have several different viruses on our...
I know. And if that's true, we might as well start lighting 10 billion funeral pyres because we can kiss the human race goodbye. So, things are getting a little desperate back home. Hence this. As doctors, we swear an oath that we will do no harm. And now I have to push a button that will sentence a man to death if I can't find a cure. And I don't know if I can live with myself. It's a damn hard thing, Captain. Damn hard thing. May I have your
attention, please? Yeah, so they can't even identify this thing.
No, it mutates as soon as it hits whatever it's going to hit.
And learns.
Yeah.
So it's starting to seem like almost an intelligent virus.
Yeah.
Raul, did you think his, you know, for the sake of the show, did you think his explanation of this moral dilemma was a little bit shallow? And if you don't know where I'm going with that, I'll explain.
I'll let you go and explain. In a way, it wasn't, because okay, if you think back with the something like the coronavirus, there's, you know, I'm speaking from the future to the past, assuming that most of the crisis is over, the freak out at least is over. It's for a lot of doctors, they, you know, it is an ethical issue. When I was doing some of the initial, you know, some of the pioneer work with defibrillation, those external defibrillators, one of the things I told the engineering, our engineers, is there are going to be at least two people who will die, and it's going to be your fault. It's going to give a false positive, and it's going to give a false negative. I guarantee it'll happen. I don't know when, but it's going to happen. If you're not comfortable with that, you need to be off this project. And I did have a couple people leave the project for the right reasons. They weren't comfortable with that kind of responsibility. But at the same time, a doctor, the kind of research doctor that Franklin is, and this is why I mentioned, you know, the coronavirus fiasco of the spring. There's a cold hard fact about epidemiology and population studies. You have to sit down and you have to decide realistically how many people is it acceptable to die. That's part of the job. You're not going to save everyone. You're not going to try. So how many people is it okay to let die? You're at the end of the day, nature wins.
Yeah.
So you've got some mitigation and control. And from that perspective, JP, I would say that Franklin's response is, in fact, a bit shallow.
Yeah, I want to hear what JP came up with.
I want to hear what JP had to go on that.
I looked at it two ways. One is sort of a fun way. The topic isn't fun, but you know, I envision Spock and his self-imposed sacrifice for the good of more than just himself, you know, in Star Trek, or in the real world. This is a guy who is allowing an experiment or procedure. It doesn't have to be virus related. He's allowing a procedure to happen to him to some extent for a selfish reason, right? He wants to be with his intended. But also, it gives scientists like Franklin a chance to pursue the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, this is a real dilemma, because I've got to push this button and it could kill the guy. And I took an oath. And I thought, you mean like if a surgeon is going to conduct a risky procedure to potentially save a life, but there is a chance the patient could die? Because the simplicity of Franklin's layout of this problem is like, this is a gigantic dilemma because the patient might die. Well, he's gonna die at some point, argue, even if it's nature. The guy set it up, right? David set this up. We all die. He goes, look, infect me, track the virus through my bod. I get to see the lady I love and get to marry her. And to me, I thought, man, it doesn't seem like it's that hard. There's a gigantic good that could come out of this. Yeah, if you push the button, he might die. By the way, not on the operating table. But surgeons do that all the time, right? There are things that they do that are truly risky, but the greater gain based on the patient saying I consent.
Greater gain for that patient individually. I've known doctors who would have that same dilemma.
Right.
Now the patient, same conflict.
This patient would gain from the greater gain. If the vaccine is found, right? If the cure is found. But a bunch of other people also benefit. So I thought it was, you know, I go back to what I always say, that was in the script. You know, it was a, it was an interesting way to set up this moral dilemma to let Franklin say, I'm going to do this, not because you can't, but because that way it's not on your conscience. And I just thought, I'm not sure that would be on my conscience in this scenario. You know, I'll push the button too in this case.
I've known doctors that would have, I have known that who would have the, have that same problem though. I've also known others who, you know, like I said, Franklin at least would be one that I would expect to like it or not. It's, you know, something like that very well can be part of your job.
Yeah. And he does take that position, right? That's my job. He's going to do it.
Yeah.
He's not protesting. He's, he, I just thought it was a bit dramatic that, you know, Chambers says, I'll do it. I can do it. He's like, no, I don't want this to be on your conscience. It's like, I'm pretty sure she understands what she's doing.
Yep.
I guess I didn't. I left the scene not distracted. She's one of by the ones it, just, that
fits.
I mean, she's on the research vessel to try to find the cure, and he's trying to protect her from. I didn't understand why this was even built up the way it was. Just push the button.
Let me throw this. Let me throw this out there for a few seconds, and we can kick this around for not very long. But what if they had put the button to push?
I know where you're going, and I was going to bring that up
in David's room.
Right.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't in the script. But.
And that is what that is actually with a doc like Franklin. That is the kind of arrangement that I would have expected to have seen done. Of course, we wouldn't have had all the real drama that got a little heavy than probably needed is the drama that came afterwards after the setup. But
so I didn't mean to derail us, but I just thought that was a little bit. I wanted more after that, I guess. And maybe that more would have come later in the series, not so much in the season. You know, the weight of this decision in this episode may have become quite a big thing, but we don't get to see that because thanks, Fox.
No, TNT. Thank TNT.
Yeah, or
TNT.
Thanks, TNT. I'll blame Fox anyway.
Yeah.
TNT Firefly'd the show, but
right. Oh, and did you catch that Rec Room announcement at the end of all this?
Yeah, I didn't.
For your entertainment.
Didn't hear all of it.
You didn't hear right. Right. It was just cute. Well, it turns out Lockley doesn't rest very well. She's not the best patient in the world. This comes on to the piece that JP wanted to mention, but he was afraid he'd forget as far as.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's in charge? Who is the master after God of this ship? It's Gideon. He dismisses, you know, he challenges her. He dismisses her and she's fine with it.
Yeah. And there was nothing wrong with it. It wasn't even disrespectful. It was just the way you do it.
Right. And yeah, there was a little more flirtation, in this one, but it's a completely different level and style from what we saw before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we know why now that we have dealt with the episode order. So.
Right.
Right. But here they're just kind of giving you the hint that, yeah, we might be developing this. We might be developing this over the course of the series. And I seem to remember seeing something on Usenet that the suit said, hurry that part up.
Hmm.
Anyway. And I'm sitting here about this point, we get the cut. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, I bet the Drak are gonna attack right in the middle of everything, and Chambers has to push the button. Duh.
Yeah.
I wonder what's gonna happen.
I don't know. Was it that obvious, or if we just watched that much of Straczynski's writing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we start to learn some. Yes, Jim.
Yeah, I was gonna say we begin to find some things out about this virus.
Yeah, so the sacrifice or risk pays off rather quickly. Yeah, the virus decompresses like a zip file, as Franklin put it.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Katz apparently is still, at least his ideas are still around in 200 years, and it only attacks critical areas. In fact, what they figure out is that it's almost a machine AI, a nanotech virus.
Mm-hmm.
And right about this point, in come the, she had to push the button because of a malfunction. But I was right in the middle of all of it. Here come the Drak, six ships, more boom.
Yep.
Did you guys catch the goof?
Which goof?
How many ships come in at first? They come in a couple waves, right?
Right.
Three appeared.
Right.
And he says, I think it was Matheson says, three. And then they cut away to a view of these inbound ships, and there are five of them. And then three more appear, and they end up with a total of six. So I don't know what they did. At some point, there must have been five, or they reused some footage or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cutaway, if you go back and look, after the first three appear, they show you five ships in a formation coming at them. Not six.
Hmm.
And it's not three, but three was the number that they were... It sounds like Monty Python, doesn't it?
Five is right out.
Right out. So I looked at it a couple times, and then I asked my wife, I said, I just froze it, and I go, how many ships do you see in this picture? She goes, five. I went, okay, thanks. I'm not just seeing things. So kind of a little interesting goof in the cutaway or the insert mm-hmm. they put in to show the ships approaching. There weren't three or six, there were five. But it was when they said there were three that had jumped in. So it doesn't change the high drama that we're about to experience.
No.
The space battle.
Which was nicely done, but, is it me or did it take them awfully long to get those fighters out there?
It seemed like it took a long time.
And at this point, I'm honestly wondering, okay, was the senator working with the Drak maybe? Or what? And then it's like, no, Raul, you're being an idiot. Because I forgot David was the reason, he snuck a phone call through. It did surprise me that the Drak are actually monitoring the situation as close mm-hmm. as they are, though.
So they want to make sure humanity doesn't actually find a way to solve the problem of the virus.
Yep. Of course, I thought there was going to be a contamination problem, but it actually turns out to have been just the opposite. It's going to automatically sterilize, which I'm thinking, okay, that's bad.
Yeah, a button pushing problem in med lab becomes a gigantic problem if this thing gets loose.
Yeah, you think.
But they got the fancy protocols in place to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right. Yep. And they've got, 3 minutes to stop it?
Yep, and they have Lockley.
I think. Yes. Well, not there. For someone who is hobbling around on a cane a couple hours earlier, she is ready to suit up and get out there. I don't know why you would think their squadron commander might be a little more current on fighter operations, but it does get her back out in space.
Yeah.
And it provides a little more drama. Oh, and speaking of drama, David's knocked out. It's going to do a flash heat. And Franklin has got to figure out a way to save him.
Yeah, got to get him out of there.
I guess that kind of solves the button pushing problem, though.
Yeah.
He's doing it by hand pump now. So what do you think of their solution to the problem, dealing with the hordes of Drak coming after them?
Encourage
the mothership. Basically, it was a carrier. Encourage it to jump and tuck in behind them and then blow it out of space.
Yeah.
Just needing to make sure that Lockley knows what they're doing, or hoping she can figure it out.
Yeah, because he says, I think he says that, right? I hope she figures out what we're doing, or we're going to have to leave her.
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, is like, okay, so if you're a fighter pilot and your carrier isn't able to communicate but suddenly starts to veer off and push full steam, you know, at first I was thinking, it's like, okay, why are they assuming that? And it's like, then I put it in those terms. It's like, yeah, there's a good chance. It's like, okay, that's your only place to land. So yeah, you're probably going to close in real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Am I off the track, JP, or am I sort of on the track?
I thought it was good. Good part of the story.
Yep.
And I had the impression that when he pushed the mothership, that all the enemy ships were rallying on that one as it began to prepare to retreat. So it makes sense that the fighters would fall in on our Star Furies would fall in on the Excalibur.
Uh-huh. Wow. End of the day, David gets saved. Boom occurs. More boom occurs.
Hyperspace boom, even.
Hyper boom. And I love the closing comment about, Sarah missed it all.
Yep.
Oh, okay. We get a little bit of a clip fest here, and none of them are that long, but they all bear a little bit of attention. So we're going to start with the discussion about David.
The shuttle is picking up David now. They'll be calling for you anytime.
Good.
You know, I noticed you didn't tell David what you told me. That it was his signal home that nearly got us all killed. Could have pressed charges.
I know. Didn't seem the right thing to do, given the circumstances.
What's that?
Invitation to his wedding. I don't know, it's bizarre. Planet is on the verge of extinction. Maybe none of us will be around in 4 years, but we still get married and we still have babies.
It's a way of saying life goes on, even maybe when it won't. And maybe that's the time when you need to believe in it the most so you remember what you're fighting for.
Yes.
They're ready for the next pod, Captain.
Roger that. They're all set, Doctor. Good luck to you. And to you. Both of you. And thanks for Doctor. Now that you've seen what you've seen, you think we have a chance to beat this thing? I don't know. God's honest truth, I really don't know.
Yeah, no. No doubt they'll beat it.
I can't imagine pressing charges on a plumber.
Right.
Who just isn't going to get it. And not because he's a plumber. He's not in the military. What's the harm in making a quick phone call to tell my fiance I'm coming home? I know I'm not supposed to, but he may not appreciate why that silence mattered. So I like the response, you know, given the circumstances and all that. Hard to blame the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that says it well.
Besides, he has now performed a huge, huge service for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then you're going to clap him in irons? No, I'm sorry. Right. That just wouldn't be.
For a phone call?
Yeah, that wouldn't be right.
No. How? And like I said earlier, Lockley and Gideon. Play that, sir.
Captain Gideon, you were looking for me?
Yes, I wanted to thank you for your help on the firing line. If you hadn't figured out what we were doing, we could have lost half our pilots out there. I'd like to buy a drink to celebrate, if you're amenable.
I'd be happy to. So, what's all this about?
I'm afraid I still can't talk about that yet. Another time, maybe?
like I said, it is such a completely different relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're still dancing around each other to a great extent.
Yep. And you know that initial antagonism is not there either.
No, it isn't.
This one doesn't get on my nerves nearly as much. The original, you know, on the Mars sessions, that I found annoying. Well, I think we all did because we were kind of cranky, salty about it. So, and Franklin's Steve Briggs' last lines on in the franchise is going to be our next.
Signal for you, Doctor.
Send it through.
I'm sorry to bother you, but I just couldn't sleep.
Neither could I.
You know, I was thinking about the nanotech virus you encountered a few months ago. The one you're using as a shield against infection by the Drock virus.
It has some surface similarity to the Drock virus, but nothing we can use as a cure. At least now I understand why it works so well. They're both based on nanotech.
Yeah, but that's not what I was calling. Now, your report states that the virus is controlled by a central computer.
That's right. Each time we use it as a virus shield, we have to reprogram it. The programming only holds for 48 hours.
Yeah, but the Drock virus is even more sophisticated. And as far as we know, they never landed a central computer system on Earth.
Looks like you had the same thought I had. What if the virus can communicate with itself, like a hive mind? What if it's testing us like we're testing it? If it's true, it's bad. Real bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we should stay close on this one, Doctor. Good night. I'll let you get back to not sleeping. I'll do the same.
So another story idea that gets dropped.
Well, it's not just this is more than just a story idea. I think this is a main point, in fact.
Yeah.
Remember, Straczynski has said in the past, we talked about this, that the virus would probably get, you know, he expected that the virus would be dealt with rather earlier than you expected. And that's really not going to be the main story at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the one thing the hive mind microscopic Borg bit makes sense. But, you know, and this may connect with the close monitoring that the Drock are doing of Earth. Maybe there is a mothership or something there that is, even with a hive mind, providing some sort of direction or control.
Yep.
Hiding or lurking around there somewhere in hyperspace, carefully hidden. Unfortunately, like you said, this is one of those new questions that we will never know at this point.
No.
But we don't end on a super low note.
No, we don't.
No.
No, we don't. Stop by the next time you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Babylon 5, as promised.
Thanks. Appreciate the lift home. Hey, you're welcome to stop by next time you're in the neighborhood.
I might do that. Thanks again.
You're smiling.
No, I'm not.
With respect, sir,
Yes. Look, who are you going to believe here? Me or my face? Anyway, we should think about coming back here on our next leave. Crew could use a break. Doctor's orders. Life goes on.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does.
We ought to stop back by here one of these days for the crew's sake. For the crew's
right.
sake. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's so selfless.
Yeah.
Totally selfless. And I love Matheson's face in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's almost like he's a teep.
I don't think he needed to be a telepath for that, though.
Nope.
So, at any rate, we are done with Crusade.
And that is the end of Crusade. Oh.
Unfortunately, you know, I think the show gets maligned a little bit. But as we could see, there was a lot of good stuff that was going to come in the future. And it's really kind of sad that it was interfered with and wasn't allowed to follow its course.
Well, keep in mind, it was Joe Straczynski that, you know, the powers that be at TNT basically said, hey, do it our way or pull the plug on the show, pull the plug.
Yeah.
And Straczynski said, fine, we're done.
And he did it their way and they still pulled the plug on the show.
Oh, no, he was doing it their way for that stretch. But it was Straczynski's decision. It's like, we're ending this. I'm not going to do it the way they want to do it.
He was probably fulfilling the order for the first 13 episodes. And they would have, if TNT had been happy about it, they would have reordered another 13 episodes. And
he wasn't going to play their game.
No. So, but I'll tell you what, you know, it really didn't hurt him a bit because he had a whole lot of good stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, hey, if they're not going to play ball with him, he had other things going on that he could fall back on.
He took over the main duties at Marvel for a while.
Yes.
Planning their main sequence. So, yeah.
So, at any rate, any closing thoughts? Do we have closing thoughts on... You just heard my closing thoughts.
Yep.
On the series. It's a balls in your court.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's much maligned. These last, six episodes of the 13 that were much more along, you know, in line with Straczynski's original plan. It had some of the wobbles that anything first season would have, but it was solid Babylon 5 universe, and it was good. It needed room and a chance to grow, but what they were starting with, I thought was good. It was a completely different show from that first block of episodes. And I'm kind of sad we're not going to see what he originally had planned.
Yeah. So what do you think, JP?
Well, I can't add anything new to what you guys said. I'll just reinforce, as a first time seeing the series, or the season series, I totally get it if somebody tuned into this in this order, that they would have not even watched these 13 episodes. They would have dropped out in 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes. And then would have grounds to say this wasn't good, it was horrible, it wasn't Babylon 5. It's unfortunate because I agree with you guys that if people had seen it through to the end that we've seen, and then probably assembled it in the proper order, it would have been a totally different, much better show. But I suspect fans fell off. They never gave it the chance. A lot of them just dropped off, didn't waste their time. Didn't get to realize it wasn't a waste of time.
Yeah.
I do know this. I am going to rewatch the Crusade at least once because I really want to get a feel for what the story would have been like in Straczynski's original planned order. Even though I know the network was really sticking their fingers in and dinking around, I'd really like to see what it felt like, what the feel is in the original order.
Yeah. I might do that down the road.
Nope.
But before we do that, there may be something else we need to do, right?
Yeah. Like I said, this is not the end of the podcast, even though it is the end of Crusade. We definitely have some more coming. And Jim, what is next?
Well, we are going to look at Lost Tales, okay? And
how are we going to do that if they're lost?
Well, kind of wish they had been. But at any rate, actually, it's called Voices in the Dark, okay? It is set in December of 2271 on the eve of the 10th anniversary of the founding of the Interstellar Alliance. The story features two linked plot lines running concurrently and covering the same 72-hour time span. The two segments are entitled Over Here, and the other one is Over There. And I think it's an awful long explanation what the episodes are about, so I think I'm just going to leave it there. And
now this has gotten maligned a fair amount, from what I understand as well, right?
Well, yeah, I'm sure it has. But in any case, we'll figure out why on the next very exciting episode of the Babylon Project podcast.
And after that, what next for us? Books?
Then we start reading.
As a teaser, is that what you're...
Then we start reading books.
Then we start reading books.
Yep. And so there's only one question left. Did we have Boom today?
We had Boom today.
Yes, we certainly did. Are we going to have Boom tomorrow?
We had plenty of Boom. JP?
We always have Boom tomorrow.
Ah.
Of course, we always have Boom.
Always. Good night, everybody.
So long. Hey, say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Night, night.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.